Welcome to Church Ahead, the weekly Christian podcast talking about big questions facing the future of church with Rev L, all the way from the north of England. Episode 89, Jesus Up. Up, up and away in my beautiful balloon. Up, up and away in my beautiful resurrection. Up, up and away in my beautiful ascension. Up, up and away. That's quite high enough, I think. With apologies to the 1960s band Fifth Dimension, I pair the resurrection with all sorts of things. And in that song, it goes with, for people of my age, with a 1970s TV commercial for Blue Ribboned Snack Bar. On Church Ahead, we're in the middle of our resurrection series for Lent 2024. And this is the second of 2 weeks talking about how resurrection shapes our picture of Jesus. We're working our way methodically through his career. Last week we went from his birth as a baby to his death on the cross. And I tried to persuade you that the resurrection brings down a cloud over his whole earthly life. Today we move on to the post-earthly phase. We're looking at Jesus' ascension and beyond, all in aid of trying to tease out what the resurrection really means. So, firstly today, ascension and resurrection. I want you to imagine that you're a school teacher in a Christian primary school, and you're the mug in charge of putting on the play pageants for each season of the Christian year. I suspect you much prefer Christmas to Easter or Ascension. Nativity plays about Jesus' birth are fairly straightforward to write, perform, and pull off. Pity the schoolteacher trying to help children dramatise the ending of Jesus' life. The death is violent, the resurrection weird and ghostly, and worst of all, the ascension. What on earth are you going to do with that one? If Jesus' life were a stage play, the resurrection would create the problem of what to do next. How do you get him off the stage and end the show? I mean, you can hardly have him slump back into his grave or retire happily ever after with six children with Mary Magdalene. Clearly, he was no longer around as the church started to write up resurrection stories. So how do they bring this divine drama to a conclusion? Ascension. Jesus takes a divine elevator up to his real home with God above in heaven. That is ascension. Up, up and away. Ascension has a lot in common with resurrection. The verb raised and the stage direction up are used for both of them. Apostolic preaching often links the two, such as, you are saved by the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who has gone into heaven and is at God's right hand. 1 Peter 3, 21-22. The risen Jesus is less human than the Jesus we knew up to his death. He walks through walls and goes from Jerusalem to Galilee without even a journey. He disappears whilst in the middle of talking to people. He is less constrained by the limitations of this world, less this worldly real physical, more ethereal. All of this is intensified by the ascension, after which he's no longer a human being in this world at all, but a heavenly creature. Ascension shows that resurrection is not so much about Jesus coming back to life of this world, but going on to life in heaven. Ascension underlines the slightly ghostly nature of the risen Jesus. Once upon a time, I was skiing with the Downhill Only Club in Switzerland. It was a lively group on our last day together, and there was end of term spirits, high spirits bordering on hijinks. We were jostling about at the bottom of the mountain with two button lifts side by side. One young man we called Champagne Charlie was high as a kite. Most of us took on one ski button to tow us up the mountain, but he decided to hold on to both lifts, one in each hand. And to make it even worse, just for the fun of it, he was going backwards, facing down the mountain, whilst teasing a very pretty girl on the next lift. What Charlie did not realise is that within 100 metres the two lifts split apart in two different directions. Now, we could all see this, and without saying anything, we just wanted to see which one he'd let go of and which one would he hold on to. Yes, dear listener, he went with the nice girl. For a few weeks after his death, the risen Jesus hovers over this earth in some sort of intermediate state between life of this world and the life of heaven. Within the narrative sweep of the Gospels, there are fields of gravity pulling him in both directions, but this is not an equal contest. The pull of heaven is far stronger. The risen Jesus is on his way to heavenly ministry, not earthly. There's really no question how the tension will be resolved. He will let go of earth. I think it makes more sense to see resurrection not so much as the follow-up of Jesus' death, so much as the warm-up to his ascension. The big idea about Jesus is supposed to be incarnation. The notion that Jesus was both fully God and fully man. One of the ways this doctrine is often explained is in terms of God emptying himself of his status and privilege to come down and live amongst us. But I'm afraid the death, resurrection, and ascension story of the New Testament portrays the very opposite. These key events of Jesus' life, reinforced by the key festivals of the church year, build a drama that moves in the other direction. What we see is Jesus progressively emptied of what? Not his divinity, but of his humanity. The crucified Jesus is very human. The risen Jesus is a bit ghostly, and then the ascended Jesus is a heavenly being, taking his rightful place with God above. The last chapter of Jesus' biography in traditional Christianity is a story of diminishing humanity, human nature slipping away, some incarnation. Resurrection is not the return of Jesus to life in this world. It's the step towards Jesus getting out of this world and going back to his true home in heaven above. The implication of resurrection, fleshed out more fully in ascension, is that Jesus does not belong in this world, not for very long anyway. Resurrection is about Jesus' escape from this life as we know it. So that was Jesus' ascension. Let's move on now to Jesus' return and resurrection. St. Paul tells Athenian philosophers that God has set a day when he will judge the world by the man he has appointed, giving proof of this to all men by raising him from the dead, Acts 17:31. Paul sees the significance of Jesus' resurrection going way beyond his earthly life. It's something to do with the final judgment of the whole world. The resurrection identifies Jesus as the one who will be doing the judging. Again, this seems to come out of the indignation early Christians felt that their master had been unjustly judged by the human judiciary of Jerusalem, civic and religious. The early Christians were burning with the need to see Jesus' execution put right. How better to reverse the injustice than by resurrection from death and then return to this world as judge? Not only has your attempt to kill Jesus failed, just wait till we get to court and then you will see who's right. Then you'll get your comeuppance. Resurrection was past history and Jesus' return was future prophecy about the future. Both stories came from the need to tell stories about God putting this dreadful wrong right. The return of Jesus takes the resurrection one step further. He's already undone their judgment. Next step, he will be the judge and they will receive his judgment on them. Although the two stories have a lot in common, they're not really treated in the same way by modern mainstream Christianity. It's acceptable within most liberal churches to treat the parousia as something unlikely ever to happen. But questioning the historicity or importance of Jesus' resurrection is surrounded by a stronger sense of taboo. When I try to think myself back into the world of the first Christians, working out their message and their stories about Jesus, I have to say I feel a bit of an outsider. Whilst I'm saddened by Jesus' death, I can't feel the intensity of their outrage. Perhaps this is because I've heard a lifetime of church putting a positive gloss on these events. But I think there's another reason. I have never met anyone who tries to justify Jesus' death. I know plenty of Jews, Muslims, Sikhs, Hindus, Buddhists, atheists, representatives of many faiths, but they only ever talk about Jesus' life and death in sympathetic and respectful terms. I've never heard anyone say, "That Jesus, he was a right nuisance. Thank God the Romans got rid of him." I've never met anyone I feel the need to put right on as far as Jesus' condemnation was concerned. I can understand how sore Jesus' followers in the 30s and 40s AD might have felt. There may well be persecuted Christians in parts of the world today who can relate to this sense of being an outsider who is scorned for their association with Jesus. But I live in a world where Jesus is respectable. Even atheists who hate God are generally polite about Jesus. Both the resurrection and return of Jesus fall flat in my sense of being a Christian today. I can see how these stories may have met the needs of earlier generation of Christians, but they do little for me. My life is not animated by the desire to see Pontius Pilate put in his place. Somewhere over the past 2,000 years, I think we Christians have moved on. We come now to our final pairing for today. One of Jesus' jobs these days is supposed to be head of the church. So let's make our final pairing, church and resurrection. The gospel accounts of Jesus' ministry were written up by churchmen looking back on Jesus' life from the period when the present religious reality around them was emerging church rather than emerging Jesus. Generally, they're quite careful to avoid projecting too much of their church life back into the life and words of Jesus. But the resurrection appearances are amongst their least successful attempts to give us the real pre-church Jesus. It is remarkable how the risen Jesus sounds more like a church leader than his former self. Matthew's risen Lord leaves his followers with the great commission of universal recruitment with Trinitarian baptism. John has Jesus reinstate Peter as Pope. Luke has a Eucharistic encounter at Emmaus and baptism by both water and the Holy Spirit. Jesus' agenda suddenly sounds very different. It switches to that of the later church. Having shown little interest in baptism or the succession of leadership in his movement, he's all of a sudden gripped by these internal ecclesiastical matters. The risen Jesus sounds like a bishop. We often draw the distinction between Jesus of history versus Christ of faith. Jesus of history is about the man who walked and talked in first century Palestine and our best efforts to know about him. The Christ of faith is all the things that later Christians have said about him afterwards. The resurrection underlines the sad fact that there is no clear line between the two, because we can only access the Jesus of history through the church and its need to say things about him that were shaped by their own church life. The resurrection shows that what Albert Schweitzer called the quest for the historical Jesus is ultimately very difficult. There may be parts of Jesus' life and deeds where we can prise the church off and recover the historical Jesus, but I cannot see us getting very far with the risen Jesus. The Jesus who rose from the dead belongs to the Christian church. He is a churchman. He belongs to the age of church rather than a Galilean preacher. Resurrection accounts are unlikely to contribute much to any serious attempt to get back to the real Jesus of Nazareth. They say more about post-Jesus church. In an age of church decline, many Christians today talk about trying to revive church by recovering Jesus. Modern Christians talk a great deal about the authentic, original Jesus, acutely conscious that their church lacks any such thing. Until we are willing to drop Jesus' resurrection, we've got no chance. Resurrection comes from church. Resurrection belongs to church. Perhaps the most difficult question resurrection poses to loyal Christians today is this: do you stand with Jesus or with church? If you're more interested in Jesus, then forget about resurrection. So, over the past 2 weeks, we've looked at the career of Jesus from his birth in Bethlehem right up to his headship of the church today. Let's draw some conclusions about how the resurrection shapes our picture of Jesus. Resurrection has a huge effect shaping the Jesus we have inherited. It doesn't merely add in a bit of theatrical pageantry to give the story a rousing finish. It changes the feel of the whole story. The Jesus we are left with is now more ethereal, magical, self-orientated, imperious, churchy, and heavenly. He is less fully and recognisably human. He is more the son of a blessed virgin and less the son of a carpenter. If only we had Mark in his resurrection-like gospel, we would never have had, for instance, the heresy of docetism, the notion that Jesus is really God who just appeared to be human. Resurrection paves the way for less human versions of Jesus. Now, there was a time when resurrection suited the picture of Jesus the church wanted to portray. For most of the past 2,000 years, church has presented a Jesus who is human plus, a man enlarged with divine greatness, a creature of both heaven and earth, poised to return and judge this world. But 21st century Christianity is moving the other way, for good reasons. For some time, the trend has been to emphasise the humanity of Jesus. A generation of clergy have found they get a better response when Jesus' full humanity is centre stage, and when the plus added onto his humanity is quietly played down. Better the shepherd than a divine judge. Better the lost 12-year-old than an omniscient creator. Better the one who wept over the grave of his lost friend than the marvel man who zaps people back to life. Many church laypeople read the Bible from time to time. Their favourite bits are often from the life of Jesus. Most of the church people I know are quite open about their religion having strengths and weaknesses. The human Jesus of the Gospels is for them the best bit. Jesus' teaching and the tales of his ministry resonate with a sense of what it means to be a human being fully alive. For many Christians, this is the core of their faith. This is the baby surrounded by many litres of bathwater. I've said this before. When a modern churchman on Radio 4 Thought for the Day wants to impress the British nation, they've got 3 minutes to say something topical and to get Jesus into the message. When they get round to saying something about Jesus, it's usually in the last 30 seconds, and it's almost always a very human attribute they reach for. Both the internal and external communication of church focuses on the humanity of Jesus. Humanity's all the time rising up the agenda of what Jesus' followers today want to say about him. Look, the Christian religion is evolving, and with regard to this, I think it's moving in the right direction. Church is making huge progress in recovering a real human Jesus, human enough to cry as a baby, feel sexual attraction to another person, and to argue with the nearest and dearest in sharp family rows. This is a Jesus people can feel moved by and relate to, a Jesus who draws people in rather than scares them away. But there is only so far this process can go before the roadblock of resurrection throws up very awkward obstacles. I'm afraid resurrection is a significant impediment to contemporary Christians' best efforts to take the story about Jesus on where it needs to go to. Can't the risen Jesus be human, you say? No, not really, because of how fundamental death is to human identity. And I mean real death. Death which is forever with no going back. Not just a weekend taster trip, but permanent. No other kind of death will do. No biography can speak to us where death has been shortened or avoided. Come with me into the Home Office to meet the new government minister in charge of this country's prisons. Wanting to know what life is really like for those on the wrong side of justice, he arranges to spend an hour inside one prison. Not content to sip tea with the prison governor, he insists on being taken to a cell. "Oh no, not another one," groans the governor. "When will they get the fact that I've got more important things to do than provide photo ops for politicians' PR? Now, this particular minister is more earnest than most. Determined to make the experience as authentic as possible, he asks to be left in a cell with a real cellmate for a quarter of an hour. The officers find him one of the less smelly cells, with one of the better behaved inmates who is searched for weapons just in case. A thoughtful and sensitive politician, he's a quick learner. To the governor's relief, the experience passes off without incident or injury. The politician gains some impression about what it feels like to have your liberty taken away and spend time at His Majesty's pleasure. That night he tells his wife about the dreadful moment when the cell door clangs shut and he's on the inside and he feels the desolation on the inside. But does he know the whole story of prison life? No. Would he dare to tell a depressed lifer in year 23 of a secure wing, "I know exactly what you've been through, I've been there myself"? No, he would not be qualified to offer any such empathy. He has not endured the tension and violence living alongside the insane and addicted, threatened and humiliated day after day, year after year, with no prospect of any other life. I cannot relate to a person who's supposed to have lived in this world but has left without facing death in its fullness. Nor can he relate to me. The New Testament letter to the Hebrews portrays a vision of Jesus being able to identify with every human experience. I quote, "We do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weakness, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are." Hebrews 4:15. How can the risen Jesus understand our fear of dying, or our anxiety about never seeing a loved one again, or worry about personal annihilation? So much of the pain of this life is concerned with death and dying, that a risen Jesus is not able to offer very much empathy where it counts. No wonder that Mother Mary became the dominant image of God's care rather than the risen Son. A grieving mother can cut it in a way that the risen Jesus never could. Resurrection has had a huge effect on our picture of Jesus, but it doesn't improve the view for people in the 21st century. Thank you for listening to episode 89. Next week, how does the resurrection change our picture of God?